Frontier.
Welcome to Wrestling Daft, the Marks, hailing from Larbert. Weighing in at 181 pounds, still trying to shed a couple of those. I'm producer of Wrestling Daft, John, and I host this show. And with me, a man who is so big that since the cancellation of the Big Show Show, he's thinking about starting his very own show called The Bigger Show Show. It's Big Alex.
Are you telling me that they've cancelled the Big Show Show?
They have cancelled the Big Show Show. Black armbands round all around, you know.
How did I miss this? I mean, this was obviously big news, and I've somehow missed the biggest news of the week.
Absolutely devastating.
Where else am I going to get my comedy kicks now on Netflix?
Who knows? Who knows where you'll be able to find such comedy? He's going to be mourning for the rest of the show after hearing that absolute bombshell. Now let's welcome opposite Alex, a man who's quicker to a wrestling story than Reby Hardy is to a tweet. It's Sports Keeder's Gary Cassidy.
Aye, I'll take that. That's very topical this week. I'm sure we'll get to talk about that a wee bit later on.
Yes, I believe we might get to that. Oh, big Reby loves a tweet, doesn't she? God almighty.
Can we first of all establish what her name is? Because I always thought it was Reby, like short for Rebecca.
Is it Reby?
I think it's Reby.
I think Rebecca's her full name. Right. So I think it's short for Rebecca.
Because my friend had that as well. That's called Reby. Because my friend was called Rebecca and she shortened it down to Reebs and Reby. So
maybe it's Reby then.
It definitely is short for Rebecca. Rebecca Victoria Hardy.
Nah, you guys are right. I'm just talking shite. So
yeah, anyway, I was going to say Reby does sound a lot better, right?
Reby does sound better. Anyway, let's carry on with the show. Gary, I just want to ask this question before we get on. Are you a WWE shill or are you an AEW mark?
We need a new term because I think I'm more favourable at Impact than the other two. So right. I think we need to, but people just write off Impact. It's nice. It's the balance of life. If I'm getting called both of them, I must be doing all right. And the balance is in there somewhere.
I did notice that was your kind of biting this week on the fish hook after people have been because I would say... From me, I would say you're more WWE leaning than AEW leaning. So I would go. I would say
probably. I think overall, I'm more consistent in terms of covering WWE. But the Impact stuff, when it comes, it's normally thick and fast. Like this week, it was just all AEW, nothing to do with WWE at all. So probably right. I think mainly just because there's three WWE shows a week and one AEW show a week, it probably does balance it more on the side of WWE. But let's not write off Impact. Impact show here. That's it.
Impact show. Right, so all the haters to Gary on Twitter, he's an Impact show. Get it right next time, okay? Let's start off with All Out. Let's talk about get your AEW mark hat on. All Out, Alex, you are a resident AEW expert on this show. Thoughts?
Oh, I'm gonna have to be a dick this week. I mean, normally I'm like licking up Cody and Tony Khan's asses, but I've got a lot of gripes this week, and this isn't just for All Out
start
as well. So let's dig into it. Let's get into this, right? So, complaint number one: way too fucking long. Way too long. Like 5 hours with the pre-show as well. I mean, as I mentioned to you guys, I unfortunately couldn't watch it live, so I kind of had like the ability to have a break when I watched it. So I watched the first 3 hours and the second 2 hours. Now, I think come 3 a.m. over here, I don't think those last 2 hours I would have enjoyed nearly as much as I did having had a break, you know? And yeah, WWE have just recently learned to shorten their shows dramatically and have everything compact and way better for it. Like, I would unfortunately say that SummerSlam is maybe a better show than All Out if you as a whole show. But that's complaint number one. Complaint number two, everyone's favourite commentator, Jim Ross. He likes to go back to 1992, doesn't he? And it's becoming all too frequent, so he needs to seriously sort that out. And it was probably as bad as Cornette's comment on NWA, if not potentially worse.
His apology was really bad as well, considering it wasn't actually an apology. And I think he's since deleted the apology, but...
Aye. Was there not like an emoji at the end of it? Was it like lighting up or something like that?
Aye, lighting up. I'm like, it's not an apology if you tell people to lighten up after you apologize.
It's the complete opposite. You're just trying to get out of dodge. This is more of a small complaint that we had the casino battle royale, and we didn't have Jake the Snake smoking tabs and dealing cards. But that's just me. But I think the main thing for everyone is the Matt Hardy, Sammy Guevara situation. Yeah. Like when that match just kicked off, they were all so hyped. The fact Sammy brought out that golf cart, you know, it was just all primed and ready to go. And then it was a blatant concussion, and they stopped the match initially, and that was the right call. Restarting the match was a ridiculous call, and restarting the match to allow Hardy to claim a bit of scaffolding while he looked pretty out of it just to let Sammy take the bump seems very, very irresponsible.
Gary, you've been very critical of this on Twitter from what I've seen. What did you make of it?
For me, again, I'm going to be careful not to assume the side of either Rebbe Hardy or Tony Khan. For me, as soon as I seen it, I was like, I'm not sure that's the most sensible way to start off a match like that anyway. As soon as I seen the spot, I was like, this is a disaster waiting to happen. Obviously, the disaster did seem to happen. And I was just like, right, referees throwing up the X. I know sometimes that can be a work. Did not seem like a work in this at this time. They put the camera away for Hardy. And it seemed like, for me, personal opinion, there is no way they could have done a proper concussion check in that time. We know from watching Scottish football, English football, if you get any hint of a concussion, you're off. That's it. Match is done. You don't, you know, seconds can be vital when it comes to a brain injury. Then I was on the post show afterwards. Tony Khan, you never ever hear opening remarks on the post show when it is in the format it was in. He done remarks saying Matt Hardy was fine, get took to hospital as a precaution, which I don't think is a thing. You don't take somebody to hospital as a precaution anyway. But he said that he got took to hospital as a precaution. And then other reputable journalists, I didn't get a question with Tony Khan, unfortunately, but other reputable journalists were asking about it. He was obviously getting frustrated about it, but answered every question to his credit. But there's a big disconnect in what Rebbe Hardy's saying, what Tony Khan is saying, and what the naked eye seen. We're no doctors, but for me, it took me right out of it. And I felt really bad for Shida and Thunder Rosa because I didn't watch their match. I had to go back and watch it afterwards, and the crowd were visibly very quiet or audibly very quiet during their match. I hated it. We'll see what Matt Hardy says on Wednesday, but for me, it was just a end the match at that spot, and whatever you do, don't have the guy that can't walk that's pulling down somebody's trunks when he's trying to like kind of roll him over. Also, he said a second time doing that, but when that happens, whatever you do, don't have him climb a massive structure which he could fall off of and do further damage. Call the match there. Nobody would be upset about it. Nobody would be like, oh, he's meant to leave the company, because how many times has somebody actually left a company after that stipulation? For me, just terrible. Badly handled, I would say, from my opinion anyway. I think it was poorly handled by AEW. And hopefully it's something they learn from, because it's not the first time. Happened before with Britt Baker. She took a kick to the back of the head for Bea Priestley. Exactly the same. Oh, not wasn't it? It was Fight for the Fallen last year. I was going to say the same pay-per-view, but that happened last year. I think they need to reevaluate, maybe not the concussion protocols, but how they're enforced.
Yeah. I've got to say thanks very much to our listeners that joined me on the Patreon pay-per-view party. Sean, Paul and Stevie. It was a small crowd.
But oh, I was hoping Sean Paul was one person there and were joined Sean by Paul. The legend.
I wonder if Sean Paul's a wrestling fan. It was. I would argue, and Alex, you might argue against, that's probably the worst AEW pay-per-view we've had so far.
I was having that exact same conversation with my friend this afternoon, and I said the same thing. I mean, you can't really count their initial kind of like Fight for the Fallen and Fighter Fest ones so much, because they were kind of like small shows, just kind of warm up. But definitely of the big ones they've done, definitely. I mean, there was some really good positives out of it. Like, personally, I really enjoyed the women's match, like both women's matches. Like, yeah. As a cinematic match goes, the initial Britt Baker Big Swole match was fantastic. And that dentistry just added such a sinister edge. And I'm sure that was the same for everyone, because we all fucking hate the dentist.
For me, it was really bold to start off a pay-per-view where you've got a crowd in the building with that. But for me, the timing, it was perfect. Obviously, it got moved to the main show. Tony Khan did say that he did move it to the main show because he was there watching it being filmed and thought it was brilliant. And yeah. I thought it was brilliant as well.
Yeah, fantastic. I loved everything about it. And Thunder Rosa versus Shida was excellent. The women on this card really delivered in a big way. That tag team match was everything that the tag team championship match was everything that it needed to be and more, I'd say. Like, I mean, it wasn't, it's a completely different match from how they did the Young Bucks versus Kenny and Hangman. And that's what it had to be. It was a storytelling match about the characters, about what's better, two of the best guys on the roster or an elite tag team. Like, and they told that story perfectly. And the ending was great. We got our Omega heel turn. We're all really happy about it. There's stuff moving forward with the Bucks. And that main event was fantastic as well. Like, MJF now legitimately looks a star. He's really proven himself in the ring. And the finish was, again, just perfect. And I don't want to say anything else negative, so I'm just not going to mention the Mimosa Mayhem.
Can I add one more negative thing as well? Right, and also the tag team match, I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. But I think that overall, I loved most of the matches. I really liked that the main event was absolutely incredible. But apart from on the buy-in, the Janela Serpentico match wasn't good. I was thinking that would be a bit better. The tag team match on the buy-in.
Sorry, the biggest disappointment about that is I learned his name is Serpentico, not Sir Pentacle.
but the tag team match on the buy-in for me was the match of the night. I absolutely loved it. Private Party versus Silver and Reynolds. That was absolutely brilliant. But the one criticism I've got, why is Darby Allin taking that bump?
Aye.
That is a career shortener. And that was my actual, like, Tony Khan had addressed the Matt Hardy question to death. There was a lot more you could ask, but no, a lot more you were going to get out of him. If I got a question with Tony Khan, I wanted to ask about Darby Allin, because I love him. I love his reckless disregard for his own body, but that guy is shortening his career every time he steps in the ring, yeah. Because that bump was just horrendous, and it didn't look like he was doing too good after it.
No, it didn't. And Gary, you caught up with John Moxley after the event, and you asked him, you had one question and one question only, and you asked him about the guy who ran and tried to tackle him at the start of at the end of the show.
Yeah, so got invited to the post-show scrum, which was great fun. Meant to be 4:30 in the morning till 6 a.m. Obviously, the show ran late, so the scrum ran late. But first up was Shida. Need to put her over because she done absolutely everything in English. She had a translator there, but man, you can tell the effort she went to keep the media happy, to improve on our English language. Came across really well. I didn't get a question with her, which I was a wee bit annoyed with, but if I was going to get one question in across the full thing, it was Shida, Moxley, Tony Khan. I'd have chose Moxley anyway if I could have, and I got to ask Moxley. A lot of the questions I had written down went out the window immediately, but I had to ask about that fan running at him during his entrance. Thankfully, the guy that asked a question before, I can't remember, I think it might have even been Bill Apter, I'm not sure, but somebody asked a question before me, and he'd spoken about having to walk up all these stairs in that heat. He was pissing out sweat, just wearing the top, sweat everywhere. And I was like, well, since you mention it, that entrance that you made, the guy that ran towards you, and man, the promo he cut on the guy was absolutely amazing. I'm not going to say anything about what he said. The listeners can just enjoy it, and it's full, sweary, uncensored glory. So you mentioned walking up all those stairs for that entrance. Another thing that happened on that entrance was the fan running towards you. I saw that you turned back after that. What were your thoughts on that? Have you got any message to fans that are going to run at superstars during this time?
It's never a good idea. I'm glad they got that on camera. They said they cut away, but I was like, man, you should put that on camera because people should know what it happens when you try to do something like that. Especially we're in a pandemic. I don't want your fucking gnarly ass getting near me. I don't even think he was trying to attack me. I think he was trying to just celebrate with me, like, yeah, rock and roll, Magley. Never a good idea. And shout out to Charlie, my man. He also spray painted my jacket tonight. Jack of all trades, Charlie. He's a guy who does just about everything backstage here at AEW. And he fucking speared that motherfucker. That was awesome. So it startled me for a second. I went, whoa, what can you do? It's live TV.
He wasn't the best pleased, was he? He wasn't the best pleased.
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant. I cut a pro on that guy left right. So yeah, not only have we got John Moxley on the show today, as from Gary also caught up with the demo god, a one Mr. Chris Jericho ahead of All Out. We've taken all the All Out stuff out of the interview, but we'll go ahead with 10 minutes of gold, including Gary not realising that Chris Jericho was a journalist when he asked it then. So you've got to hear that. So Chris Jericho is on the marks, and we've got 10 minutes with Jericho a bit later on in the show. as usual, we'll be putting over buying stuff from the shows. It's one of, again, one of those weird weeks where we're kind of going back to the past, to the future kind of things. So we'll have that later on. We've got a special guest on Buddy and Put Over as well. Talk sports, talk wrestling host, Alex McCarthy is going to be joining us. Because we've got to plug Gary's new podcast as well. He's cheating on us behind our back. So he's kind of like Kevin Nash and Razor Ramon on us and Jump Chips. But we'll plug that and speak to Alex. He's going to do SmackDown for us this week. Once again, we are on that wrestling daft draft heading to Fantasy Booking Island. We're going to find out who won the triple threat last week when we were asked to book actors as wrestlers. We've got the results for that coming up. And there's going to be a rule change on Fantasy Booking Island. We'll find out what that is a bit later on in the show. Alex is looking a bit worried. And of course,
Alex is never worried. He knows what his competition's like. He says
before he loses. Well, we'll find out later on, Alex.
Because I can tell from John's demeanour that John might have won this because he runs the Twitter.
He looks a little smug guy. I can see a little bit of confidence in there.
Could possibly say. And we're going to be heading to the land that's made up of 6,852 islands. That's right, Japan, as we once again turn Japanese with Bag Alex. But first, let's cut a promo.
I have a lot of things I want to get off my chest.
Right, give me the mic. It's time to cut another promo. Right, I've not done anything on wrestling for a little while now, and it's going to continue that way because something's really pissing me this week, right? I walked in to get a bagel, as you do, you know. But then I looked down the menu, right? Since when did people start calling avocado avo? Right, so the menu was smashed avo and eggs. I was like, what the fuck is an avo? So now it's been shortened to avocado. This has fallen on from the trend from coleslaw, where everyone started calling it slaw.
I feel like we're now moving into this being called Waitrose Daft.
Oh, John hates hipsters. Or John can't embrace the 2020, basically. That's what it is. He's still living in 2010 before abbreviations were cool.
Please don't tell me that you refer to an avocado as an avo.
No, I call it an avocado. I don't.
I never eat them, so I don't ever refer to them in any way, anyway.
I refer to them, say if I'm texting someone about an avocado, I will say avo, but I will abbreviate anything in text form anyway.
Right.
Does that count?
Oh, no, John's cutting a promo on Alex this week. This is where we've just led to.
People are just lazy, Alex. People are just lazy.
It's shorthand form. We've been developing it since the dawn of the mobile phone. It's a beautiful, beautiful way that saves us all hundreds of time.
John, what are your thoughts on guac? It's short for guacamole.
Oh. Right, this is right. People are just getting lazy. They can't be arsed writing stuff. They can't be arsed even saying stuff now. It's slaw. They've cut the coal off the slaw. They've cut the caddo off the avo. You know, now I saw someone the other day refer to Manchester as Manny. What the fuck is Manny?
People, that's too far. Things like cities do need to be enunciated.
So are you suggesting to me that it's okay to shorten the name of foods, Alex, but cities are off the limits?
Okay, now I feel as though I'm just opening you up to a new warpath. But yes, I believe certain things say in full, like names. Oh, no, mind you, I shorten names as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just digging a well here. Exactly. I'm sorry.
So I'm away off to get my beef and my che and maybe put some Tom K over the top of it. Fuck off with your shortening.
It's Tommy C, mate. I think you'll find when you're talking about the kids.
Just say the full fucking thing. It's coleslaw and it's an avocado. Okay, let's move on. So every week we take a look back at the big wrestling shows, separating the good from the bad. On our buddies and putovers. Normally we have a guest mark on, and we thought we'd invite one of Gary's new friends on, one of his new wrestling friends. He's cheating on us. He's with another podcast, and he's cheating with Alex McCarthy from Talk Sport. You might have heard him on Talking Wrestling on their Mondays. 6-8, Alex, is that right?
It is. It's not this week, but that's because Talksport love to change us all the time. So don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah. Listen, thanks for coming on, mate. I really appreciate it. Tell us about this new podcast that you guys have set up.
What, this sordid affair that I'm having with Gary?
Yeah.
He's outnumbered by the journalist this week, so he's not going to make any journalism jokes because he's outnumbered. So.
Yeah.
So, it's basically just something we put together. I thought it was quite a unique perspective to have a lot of the, what I would call leading voices in the UK for wrestling journalism, get together and give their takes. And, of course, all of us are really good at covering different stuff. So Stephanie Chase, for instance, is a great voice for New Japan. Gary's really locked into Impact. And then obviously you've got the bog standard guy like me who loves WWE and AEW. So there's lots of different kind of tastes and takes. And I think that, yeah, it just makes interesting. Somebody actually tweeted the other day and said it was like Sunday supplement, just like a round table of wrestling. I actually quite like that. I thought, yeah, all right, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. At least you guys know what you're talking about, as opposed to us marks have no fucking idea and just make shit up as we go along. Where can we get it? What's the name of it, Alex? We'll plug it at the end as well, obviously.
So it's just on YouTube at the moment, called Wrestling First, but we are going to be distributing it to the usual podcast suppliers in the near future. It was just a bit of a pilot, but it seems to have gone well. So, we're back at it this week.
Great. Look forward to hearing the next episode. And thank you very much coming on, taking the SmackDown bullet, though we have discussed in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, it's no longer a bullet. It's definitely no longer a bullet. SmackDown is the A show for me right now, I think.
I
think that the one thing we need to say is it's great having Alex on, because it means that for a change, John is the first person to see Alex McCarthy of TalkSport on the podcast, whereas I see it every week or every second week, it seems like. So it's nice that John has to break that that little bit, first of all.
Yeah, thanks for all the news you provided, Alex. Let's kick off then with Big Alex, who is going to do AEW. It's one of those weird weeks where we've already talked about Oi, but we're going back in time to on the run-up to the main event. What's happened?
Well, we had a bit of a mega home show, so my negative streak is going to continue. Oh. We had the return of the elusive Excalibur with absolutely no explanation, and Wardlow decided to wrestle a door. I'm fortunately enough, this week I've picked some really serious putovers because we've got the journalists on. So my first putover, because we love our clothes on here, is Kenny Omega's Pete shorts. No, I'm not. That is actually a joke. Don't worry, that's fine. I did like his Pete shorts and the fact that he called the Revival a bunch of, hillbillies, and you've got Adam Page with his full makeup. But the first thing I'm going to put over, because I have been cheering on the AEW women's roster for ages, is Serena Deep, who looked terrific. I had no idea who Serena Deep was, and her and Thunder Rose's match was the best, was the match of the night by far. And my second put over is directly linked to that, which is Thunder Rose's theme music. Like, how good is Thunder Rosa's theme music? It's like Sepultura, but for me. Yeah, they're Brazilian. That's a terrible reference considering she's Mexican. And, I mean, I'm just going to have to keep shitting on them. So, first of all, for the Burries, why do you have a mini battle royale to hype your battle royale? It seems like you're kind of giving away the entire premise of what you're building to on the Saturday and just throwing it away from TV the day before. At least do it in kind of little segments or something. It just seems a bit silly to me. And the other glaring obvious, Barry, has to be the poor three count that wasn't during the Best Friends versus Santana and Ortiz. That was blatantly caught on camera. There was blatantly just a little moment when the interference didn't come quick enough. And the three count was called, and the ref just kind of stopped just before he came down for four, and nobody mentioned.
Yep, so. I noticed that as well. Now it's like, oh, that is yet another little refereeing niche, we'll say, that's happened in AEW. It's the one thing that I'm like, oh, always takes me out of it when you see a four count, but well.
And it was Bryce Ginsburg, I'm sure, as well.
Was it?
Yeah, because Bryce, I used to get confused between Rick Knox and Bryce Ginsburg and think they were both as bad as each other, but it turns out it is mainly just Bryce Ginsburg. I hate to say it.
And then didn't he get the main event slot at All Out as well? Yep. Is that Bryce Ginsburg?
Yeah, exactly. So your most trusted one. And then the worst thing is, like, after, of course, they completely ignored Aubrey when she had her spot earlier on in the night. They didn't have a good weekend with referees, good week with referees in general, actually.
Are you going to leave us on a positive, Alex?
Well, I'm just going to again put over how good Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deep was, because that was the match of the night for me, really. And I feel as though I've not really flushed this week's out as much as I normally do. So there you go, John.
That Short was one that on the pre-all-out post, pre-all-out post show, I was going to say, the all-out pre-media conference call, Tony Khan just kept ranting and raving about how he put the women in that. He kept saying semi-final spot, you know, the second hour and like just before the main event, and how they both delivered, and said that he'd love to see more Serena Deeb, which I think a lot of people would in AEW. So that was one that he definitely took stock of on the pre-all-out conference call. So,
yeah. So, is there any news from the journalists regarding the future of, say, Thunder Rosa and the rest of the NWA wrestlers? Because it seems a bit strange that she was drafted in. I mean, I'm not complaining in any way, but
I think it was interesting that they gave Thunder Rosa like so much, because think about this in the WWE landscape, right? At All Out, and the NWA champion was obviously pinned clean at the end of it. So, I guess for that to happen, there was always going to be her showcased in a very positive and efficient way. And Thunder Rosa, like you just said, on TV and on pay-per-view, she looked great. I thought she did a fantastic job. And Tony Khan, as Gary just alluded to, he was not only talking about the semi-final spot there, he was just waxing lyrical about Thunder Rosa in general. So I think the relationships there moving forward, he didn't commit to anything, but I think it's very clear that he likes Billy Corgan, who we met through Chris Nowinski, and he was going very much into detail about all of this, just to, you know, very elaborately say how much he likes Thunder Rosa and stuff. So I think she's on their radar. And to be honest, she deserves a bigger platform than NWA, with all due respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I noticed Billy, it was quotes from, like, Billy Corgan did a bit of a voiceover in the pre-match package as well. So there's obviously a bit of a developing relationship yes. there. Probably makes quite a lot of sense for them just now anyway.
Yeah, there was big rumours that Aldis was going to be the surprise guest in the Battle Royale as well. And we were very much looking forward to that. And then Matt Sydal.
Oh, we didn't mention Matt Sydal.
No, we didn't mention that at the start.
We politely glossed over it for...
Okay, I'll take it back. Matt,
yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to NXT. It was the big Fatal 4-Way Iron Man match. Start with a putover. I think Casey Catanzaro, American Ninja, could potentially be the female equivalent of Rey Mysterio. Now, bear with me on this one. She's a bit green at the start, but I think she's got real potential. See her in-ring work, just the progression of it over the last kind of couple of months when I've seen her. She's really coming on, and she had a really good match with Candice LeRae. I have to add, that new finisher for her looks absolutely brutal. Yep. Love it. So
I think Casey Catanzaro as well. I think my favourite thing, you know, apart from the fact that she has gotten a lot better in the ring and looks like a legitimate star now, I love all the things that we see for before the match, like the climbing up the ring post and all that. Like, that for me is just the little things that, like, for younger viewers, I think would just draw them into somebody. And I think that is what, when you put that in a big platform, you get just people loving that person and making
it a star. I think, Gary, you'll back me too. Look, I've tweeted a fair few times. I'm quite a big fan of hers, Casey Catanzaro. Like, I feel like she's just got that unique upside that you can't say there's anyone. There's no like mold like her in WWE at the moment. Like you just said, there's a real niche for her there to explore. They just she just needs to develop and grow, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to. I don't want to, but I'm going to have to bury the main event.
You should actually put everyone over last week on the podcast, because we all say that it's ending in a draw.
I know.
Yeah. Everybody say that it's ending in a draw. I think most days get the names wrong as to who was going to tie, but at least everybody predicted it.
I think your expectations were so high with the four guys that you had in there. The 60 minutes, I just didn't connect for me.
It didn't need to be 60 minutes. Like, I mean, I get they were trying to put everyone over, like, as the big faces of NXT, but that they could have done that in 30 minutes. Like, what was the first fall was maybe, 40 minutes in?
The pacing at the start was really off for me. Yeah. I was watching both NXT and Impact at the same time, because they're both on a Tuesday, and as we've established, I'm an Impact mark. So it was just, I was watching both, and I was being drawn more to Impact because it was just very slow. And obviously Impact actually had a new champion crowned at the end, as opposed to the the match that we thought would get a new champion crowned. So.
Sorry, John. Gary has hijacked this week's NXT because they've hijacked his Tuesday. So he's hijacked
the
show.
I'm way up to bury. I mean, it was good and really, really good when it was really, really good. It was really, really good when it was kind of turned, like you say, the pacing was a bit out on it. So Yeah, I'm going to have to bury that. I can't believe it. And when he put over, finally, the dive off the forklift in the street fight, I thought it was great. And actually, as a whole match of the night, I thought the street fight was really good fun.
You love Breeze Angle, John. You love Breeze Angle.
Get put over. But the fact that I just love it.
Where did the forklift come from?
Exactly.
That's my question.
Yeah. It wasn't the usual street fight go below the ring. There was like a ladder set there. There was a forklift in the middle of the arena. You know, it was just all.
You know what they should have done? They should have had Breeze Angle come out this week as construction workers and drive the forklift down to the ring beforehand. Like, they have the perfect tag team to do it. It would have worked and no one would have questioned it.
Absolutely. You should be on that creative team. So that was my match of the night. Let's move on to SmackDown, which, you know, we said is normally the SmackDown bullet, but it seems to be the best show there is at the moment. Alex, what did you make of it?
I'd be hard-pressed to bury anything from this last Friday. I quite liked everything that I saw. I thought Roman looked extremely badass at the beginning of the show, like, finally doing all the tendencies that we've kind of prayed for many years now. And I quite like the Heyman dynamic. Like, I like it that it's not just straight up the same as Brock Lesnar, like advocate thing. It's kind of being played on that Roman is the one who's really pulling the strings and being cerebral for the one out of Triple H's book. So I think I like that. It feels fresh, and I've been pining for Roman to not just be a straight up terrible cookie cutter baby face for so many years now. So to be honest, any kind of heel turn probably I would be going, it's so good, but like putting in with Heyman, I think it's great. The Sasha and Bayley split, like, I'm gonna bury it a little bit because I just felt like there was loads of breaks in it that kind of took me out of it. Like, do you know what I mean? The pacing of it, it was also a terrible spot with the stairs. But other than that, I felt like it was quite well done. Sasha being written off, and it's kind of one of them where it had to really happen now. Like, how long could they really drag it out for, and how long are they going to drag it out for from here? So I don't know. Like, it leaves I don't mind questions, and things are kind of well done. I'm glad Big E wasn't in the main event to take the loss. Am I glad that Sheamus beat him up in his like snatch get up? Not really.
And that they wasted a full cake as well in the full segment there. They had him drop a cake, and it's like, oh, what?
Yeah. Imagine bringing that in just to drop it. Come on.
He was burying someone's Peaky Blinders gimmick the other week. So, John, I mean, what do you think of the snatch gimmick for Sheamus?
I mean, are they just going through, like, well, I mean, they were a bit behind in Peaky Blinders. They'd done it 5 years ago. They might have been, Ridge Holland might have been in there, but snatch was what? 1990, was it 90s? I think it was even the.
I think it was 99. I think
you're forgetting we had the full Happy Gilmore reference a few months ago with the golf thing between the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders. So maybe it's just maybe Vince has gone through his old DVD collection and we're getting the old references coming out, or maybe Mauro Ranallo has transitioned to the creative
team. To the creative team.
So no buddies at all.
I don't think so. I think it was the best SmackDown I've seen since the Invasion one, I would say. You know, where NXT came up before Survivor Series last year. So, like, as an overall show, I thought everything kind of moved it along and it was pretty entertaining. I can't even really bury Jey Uso as a contender, because I actually quite like the story-laden challenges rather than just, like, if they'd given me Corbin or Sheamus, I'd have been like, ugh. But at least this one is got a kind of direction and a sentiment and a story behind it. So I don't need to complain.
Surely it plants a heel to turn the Usos with Roman, considering they were really good heels with the Usos, with their day one-ish kind of bloodline stuff.
The Usos heel turn, like, what was it, 2016, is one of the freshest heel turns I've ever seen. Like, that revitalized them to no ends. I'd love to see that, them together, bloodline.
I was going to say, the one thing for me was the Sasha Bayley turn. I think the way they done the initial bit wasn't quite as impactful as it could have been. Like, maybe, and I know this is really cliche, but like, maybe giving her a hug and then hitting the Bayley to Bayley would have been probably really on the nose, but it'd have been the impactful way to do it for me rather than just the way they done it going out of the ring.
The Bayley to Bayley sucks now. Doesn't finish anyone.
It's not a finish. It's just a move.
No, I know what you mean though. Like, it was just like it wasn't like a Kevin Owens Jericho head through the TV set moment. It was just a standard well, she just punched her, basically, like when they were on the way out of the ring. Like, oh, all right. Yeah, I know what you mean. There could have been more of a, like, indelible moment. Indelible? Indelible. Sorry.
I think with the Reigns Uso thing as well, I think that'll really firm. I think Reigns will absolutely batter him, and it'll just put him totally over his heel. I mean, taking out your own family member, I reckon that's why they've done it. So that'll be good. That'll be good. Match tonight, Alex.
I mean, the four-way was pretty entertaining, I guess. But I think because there wasn't actually that much match time, was there? There was that. There was the tag title rematch. Which probably wasn't as good as it was at the pay-per-view. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm just thinking now what the actual matches were, because Sami Zayn was out there, right, doing his thing with, which is also not great. And then you've got Heavy Machinery and Miz and Morrison. So, I don't know. All things considered, probably the four-way, but I don't think it was a stellar night for action. It was more kind of moving stories along.
Yeah. That's the good thing, though. It just seemed that WWE are establishing stories, and you want to watch the next episode because they are establishing these kind of storylines in it now. So, which I think has been missing for a wee while now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, a long time.
To Raw. It's if Pritchard has enough time to transition that to Raw.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, it's episodic TV, and how long has it been since? I hate to be this guy, but like in the Attitude Era, like, or like when I first loved it, it felt like every episode ended on like a cliffhanger, nearly every single one. So it feels like they lost that magic the past few years. But SmackDown was like a refresh. Raw yesterday, like, had some cool stuff, but overall very missable.
Well, let's move on to that now with Gary.
Preempting Gary's potential buries there.
Well, I'm starting with a bit over, and it goes to what was just said there about storyline progression. I've been pretty critical about the, while I love the Hurt Business stuff, and I have loved it for the past, you know, however long it's been going for, big fan of what MVP's doing nowadays, but it seemed like it was stagnating a bit, whereas last night we got like about a month's worth of storytelling in the space of like 5 minutes with Cedric Alexander. So just putting over the fact that they're using Cedric Alexander in a good way, and I think they've done it all the right way as well. The beatdown before the match, and then having them kind of, we all knew the turn was coming for how they'd done it, like after that, but it just was done the right way. Had them wearing the purple tights, and then they come out later on with them wearing black and gold tights, got the t-shirt, got the full thing, and it looks like we're at least getting a little bit of a difference there and a bit of storyline progression. So definitely, definitely putting over Cedric Alexander, just the way they're using him.
You know, I liked as well in that, sorry, I liked how Shelton Benjamin said to him backstage, like, this better not be like a double cross, because so often, like, baby faces and heels are like just stupid in WWE. So I actually, it was a small detail, but I liked it.
And there was another little bit there as well that was something I put over a few weeks ago as well. I can't remember when it was, but the seeds being planted with MVP saying to Cedric Alexander, how can you be in a tag team with someone who calls himself the one and only? I was like, oh, I love that. I absolutely love that. Yeah, and they called back to that last night. I was like, oh, I love that. And saying that, I've got two biddies, but the only serious biddy I have is the tag team division. How many times have we seen Street Profits versus Garza and Andrade? Too many. That's how many. It's becoming the Baron Corbin Dolph Ziggler feud again, where we're just seeing the same match every week because they don't have other tag teams.
Baron Corbin, any feud.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've been hinting at this split for so long, and it's the opposite of storyline progression. So that, for me, it kind of leads into as well, you know, the brand-to-brand invitational. I thought we'd forgotten all about that. Sadly not. We're getting a Survivor Series match next week and a champion v champion match. But maybe they'll lead to them unifying the titles, since the tag team division could maybe do with that. SmackDown has not got many challengers for the tag team titles, so maybe that's where we'll go. Another wee half berry there is the Street Profits using all those cups on their entrance because it's not environmentally friendly. maybe they should reuse them. Hopefully they are. But my other berry is, again, it's a kind of minor one that's me being really pernickety. We've been going so long with this, you know, WWE being obsessed with stories surrounding eyes. Aleister Black being the latest one. They had the black bandana. I had the black drips for his eye last week. And I was like, please tell me we're going to get a black contact lens. And some kind of, because it seems like he's got this thing where, you know, the eye seems to either give him some kind of powers or make him be in some kind of pain where he unleashes that pain on everyone else. Something was there. Something was intriguing about it. And then they had him in Raw Underground last night, and he just casually whipped off the bandana. I still don't know if he was wearing a black contact or not, because they never properly zoomed in on it. The screenshot that I took that was like the closest you could get, I still couldn't tell. So for me, I just wish they'd done something a bit more with that. I don't mind if we just go into Aleister Black being, you know, dominant again, because he's only lost one singles match, I believe, since well, unless you count the AJ Styles one and the gauntlet handicap match type thing that they've done. But for me, they just didn't make enough of that. Wee bit annoyed that they didn't make a lot of that, considering it's been a prevalent story over the past few months, I think, now. So, yeah. I forgot one of my biddies. Quick other biddy, quick bonus biddy, Retribution having branding. They should be have branding just as they work. I keep likening it to that Family Guy thing where it's like, oh, who was it that attacked? Oh, I don't know. And then it's like Cobra, because they've got the branding. They shout their name as they're attacking. So that, but we'll ignore that. We'll pretend that didn't happen. I didn't bury it, even though I just did. The final put over.
Their mission statement as well. That this makes no sense. Oh,
Jesus. But the final put over leads into match of the night. Dominic Mysterio. Man. It just impresses me. Every time he gets in the ring, he impresses me more and more. Or outside the ring, I should say, because that's where he done most of his good work last night. Absolutely incredible. Flying off the screens, doing that crossbody. The sunset flip, sliding from the inside of the ring to the outside, putting Murphy through the table. And Murphy should be put over for, you know, everything he done in the match as well. Took a big beat down with kendo sticks for the full Mysterio family. You know, Dominic Mysterio has now had 5 matches in WWE. One of them has been a normal singles match, 2 tag team matches, and 2 street fights. So now it looks like we're getting street fight specialist Dominic Mysterio. But I just thought he looked brilliant. Absolutely loved the new attire as well. Think he's coming into his own the more and more we see him. And that for me was match of the night. Really enjoyable. And I keep saying it, the last impression is normally the lasting impression. For me, that just made me look back at Ron and go, that was a really good show. So,
Can we over the fact he's got rid of that hood? Because that hood made no sense. He never used
it. Because it had the mask.
Before he did a Ray move, fair enough. But
no. What do you make, Gary, of... I've not seen Robert, kind of seen the highlights online. Peyton Royce and Billy Kay, they seem to have just rushed that on. I mean, it just seems like a complete and utter waste.
You can see Alex shaking his head. I think he's conveying my thoughts perfectly there as well. And, you know, I keep saying it, my most disappointing thing is that none of them get to keep the music, because that was Billy Kay's music to start with. And it was one of the best theme tunes in WWE, but it's by CFO dollar sign, however you pronounce it. So maybe that's why. But yeah, it seems like they don't really know where they're going with it. We saw the wee beautiful thing that happened last week on Raw Underground with Peyton Royce chucking Billy Kay into the ring to be annihilated. And then it was all forgotten this week, and they were good pals after the match, hugging away. So, yeah.
Gary, are you suggesting that they don't have a long-term story for that?
I would never.
Bold.
Yeah, it's very strange that they've just kind of rushed that on. Anyway, thanks very much for coming on, Alex. Really appreciate it. Just another plug for the podcast. Where can we see you? Where can we get you?
Well, thanks for the invite. And, so you can get me at AlexM_Talksport on Twitter. Wrestling First is, of course, the podcast, and you can also find them on Twitter at Wrestling First. But you'll find me all over the shop, talksport.com/wrestling, and of course, I've got my show Talk Wrestling, which is on Talksport too. So you'll get sick of me, but I'm around.
Nice. And remember, you can get your buddy and put overs in for Rabbit and Grado this week for the headline show. Remember, you get them on Wrestling Daft on Insta, Wrestling Daft Podcast, and just Wrestling Daft on the Facebook. Once again, it's time to return to the land that gave us Mario and Sonic the Hedgehog. It's Turning Japanese. And we started this off last week, and I thought we'd continue it. But I give you a wrestling catchphrase, and you've got to guess what it is, okay? You ready for this week's? Here we go. Ewaga, tizakute, erumono no nio wa shamasu ka. I'll do that again. Ewaga, tizukututi, Eru mono no nio wa shimasaka.
You just made the list?
No.
Oh, damn it.
I'm going to say the same thing I said last week. Because that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
No! Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
You're okay.
And obviously, he can't smell much because he just had the COVID. So, sorry, I stole that joke off. Anyway, let's move on. It's time to turn Japanese and find out what's been going on in New Japan, Alex.
Let's move back a second, though, because I keep hijacking this to talk about video games, right? So the re-release in Mario 64, so we all need to get excited about that. Right, now back to wrestling. We'll keep it short and sweet this week because the G1 starts in a couple of weeks and they have been very tight-lipped about how they're actually doing it. They haven't released the sketch. Well, they've released the actual schedule, but they haven't released the wrestlers who are competing. So we'll keep it short because next week we'll have a bit of a hijack and we'll go through the G1 in detail. So we'll be good. The only thing of really of note this week was we had the return to the ring of Jay White, who is, I've been bigging up for the last few weeks. He's one of the best counter wrestlers in the game. Him and Flip had a great match on Friday night. If you haven't seen it, go and see it. I am slightly disappointed, though, that we probably won't get any American wrestlers in the G1, as they've come out and said that basically if anyone is to be in the G1, they would already need to be in Japan to meet the two-week Japanese quarantine rules. So anyone we'd have seen recently, I'm not sure when they taped Strong, actually. So, I mean, it's possible that they've taped that and then flown some of the talent over to Japan, but I'm unsure of the situation. The other interesting bit that came out was a little bit of the booking plans for the G1 pre-COVID. Now they were essentially saying that this was going to be a really big showing for Will Ospreay, and he was going to kind of really cement himself as a proper heavyweight talent during this event. Now, with travel restrictions, COVID and the speaking out movement, I'm not sure if that will happen so much anymore. So, and I'm not sure how positively that would be received by a lot of the international fan base if that did happen.
On Twitter, not very well, judging by Rev Pro's recent announcements.
Yeah.
How did that go? I haven't actually seen that.
Not well.
It did not go there.
A lot of backlash. They stuck him in on the poster like a day after. I think we spoke about this on the main wrestling when we filled in, but it was they put him on the poster like 2 days after, or they'd recorded the show 2 days after the promoter for RevPro had done a 4-hour long podcast about the speaking out movement. So yeah, not good.
A little bit harsh. So, and so we've got next week, hopefully they'll have announced the competitors or else it's probably going to be another quiet week.
No problem. And until next week, sayonara. Now, I'm pretty sure you're on our Patreon, but if you're not, why aren't you? Get involved. You get more content from this show. You'll get stuff from us. You can get the video version of this show. You get ad-free version of this show, as well as Rab and Grado. Get early episode access to Wrestling Daft, the headline show. You get bonus content now and again. We put something up there. You get a full video version of this podcast. I've said that already, but it's worth saying twice. Plus, you get to vote on the list of Wrestling Daft, and also joining up there now, you'll get to vote on Fantasy Booking Island. So that's the way we're going. All the details very soon on that. That's on tier 1 and tier 2. An IC champion is about $7.70 a month. You'll get everything in tier 1. Get a video version. We're having Grado. You'll get all the bonus episodes that we've got up there already. They include the Grado story, part 1, part 2, Rab on Wrestling. We've done a couple of things. We did an AEW report card. We've got more big plans coming this month as well. So lots of bonus episodes going up there. And you can join our Patreon pay-per-view parties. We just did one there at the weekend for All Out. We all got horribly drunk. And most of us missed the main event because it was on at 4:30 in the morning. So you'll get that all in tier 2. And tier 3 is a World Heavyweight Champion, about £15. Sign up for that for 3 months. You get a Wrestling Daft t-shirt, chance to come on this show as a mark or do the run-in on the main show. So get involved right now, patreon.com/wrestlingdaft. That's patreon.com/wrestlingdaft. We'd love to have you on our roster. It's the Wrestling News with Gary Cassidy.
Quiet week.
And that's the news.
Let's start off with a story that I think is done the rounds this week. It's really hot at the moment. Is Vince pulling the plug on third party platforms?
Yeah, so this is one that I think has been slightly taken out of context in a lot of ways, but we'll explain what's happened first and then let people make their minds up. So everybody knows that a lot of WWE talent use third-party platforms. If you don't know what a third-party platform is, it's essentially anything that sees them do something that's not part of WWE's programming. So Twitch, YouTube, Cameo, pro wrestling tees, any supplements that they advertise. I don't know if anybody gets the suggested posts on Facebook for supplements that are endorsed by Joe Anoa'i, Roman Reigns. A lot of different things fall under this umbrella, which is where the confusion seems to lie. It came out by several people. I think Dave Meltzer was one of the first to announce it. Sean Ross Sapp, literally everybody who's anybody in the journalism world had this story out there in some shape or form. And it was that WWE were going to, and we're paraphrasing here because, again, it's been kind of put out in several different ways, they were going to ban the performers, who we all know, independent contractors, not employees, ban them from using third-party platforms. Now, there was no clarification on what a third-party platform was at first, which I think is where a lot of the confusion lay, and the blame, I will say, is on WWE, because the clarity has to come for them. But it got as far as, don't know how clued up people are on American politics, but it got as far as Andrew Yang, who is, I get the name right. So he's obviously had applied to be the, I think, Democratic nomination.
Yeah, he was actually doing really well. He was their Asian, he was like, he's half Asian, is he not? And he did quite well, I believe.
I remember he was on Jericho's podcast, I think, as well. Former, almost presidential candidate was pretty far up there, and potential future Labour secretary. So someone who would maybe have a lot to say in this type of thing in terms of a legal standpoint. But he put out a pretty wordy thread about his thoughts on this, asking for WWE to clarify their position, said that even if he is not the person that gets that job, he will no doubt have the number of the person that gets that job and will be seeking for clarity on that and will be trying to change the way that things are run. So that will be interesting to see. However, over the past 24 hours, there's been a wee bit of clarity came out on this. Apparently, there was a meeting last night. Dave Meltzer and Sean Ross Sapp both put out that info. Again, not a lot of info came from it, but the main thing was kind of something that developed over the weekend anyway. WWE superstars will still be able to use Twitch, YouTube, Cameo, it's believed, out of those three. However, they can't use it based on their actual WWE name. So the character name can't be used. The performer can use their performer name. I actually got a statement for WWE over the weekend on this. I'll not read out the full thing because it is pretty wordy, but I'll just read on the key parts. There was a lot of annoyance over one of the words used, which a lot of people, I think, just didn't really understand the use of the word. Much like Disney and Warner Bros., WWE creates, promotes, and invests in its intellectual property, i.e. the names of performers. They then list five performers, and it's, and this is where people get annoyed. It's the control and exploitation of these characters that allows WWE to drive revenue. People were saying, oh, they're exploiting, their employees. Not employees for a start, as we've already clarified, independent contractors. But it's no saying that they're exploiting the employees. It's saying they're exploiting the intellectual property they've created in order to make profit. That is just business terminology. That's the way things are. Whether you agree or disagree with the fact that they're exploiting people or not, the exploitation statement they used isn't actually related to that. So yeah, they say that. And the layman's terms of this full statement, because it is quite a lengthy statement, is that WWE, of course, are going to try and protect their brand. Maybe somebody using Twitch or Cameo doesn't really do much, but somebody maybe promoting a product that hasn't been okayed by WWE could. And this was something Tony Khan, even he was asked about this on the AEW call that I was on, and he said, we are completely fine. They had that beautiful shot of the Twitch thing during All Out. Absolutely loved it. But he was asked about that and he said, we, of course, promote people going using their Twitch, using their YouTube. But if it came to the fact of a performer going to Pepsi to try and get endorsed by Pepsi, we wouldn't be a fan of that, which is understandable because WWE couldn't be negotiating with Coca-Cola and somebody goes with Pepsi. That's where it all comes into play. So, yeah, a lot of controversy surrounding that. But what has came out is essentially that Twitch, Cameo, YouTube will probably be okay. There's a wee bit of speculation that WWE might actually go into business for themselves on Cameo and use that as a way of them making money, and, you know, the superstars get a cut of the profits. They take all the bookings, do everything that way, and that's the way it works. But yeah, one last interesting note on that. As far as I know, a couple of PWT's sites will be getting removed, or I'm not going to say getting removed. That leads me that would lead people to believe that they're being forced to be removed. Can I imply that? But a lot of pro wrestling tees stores that are of current WWE superstars will probably not exist over the next few weeks. So if you want to get a t-shirt for one of your favorite WWE superstars that's not a WWE shop t-shirt, probably do it now. But interesting development anyway. Yeah. Something that we'll keep an eye on.
I mean, if you go to any employment lawyer, I mean, this is where WWE, I think, have done a backtrack. Because I'm pretty sure if you went to an employment lawyer, you know, in this country, certainly, it's almost like the Bosman rule. And, you know, you can't stop an independent contractor making money elsewhere. You know, if you don't...
It'll be part of their exclusivity deal. And yeah. I think a lot of it is to do with the amount of time these talents are spending on unmonitored international television broadcasting. Not underneath the WWE umbrella, and some of the things that are coming out with it, because you've got like Lana appearing on Rusev's stream all the time. Yeah. You've got AJ Styles. A couple of stuff's come out about AJ Styles talking about how unhappy he was with Paul Heyman and things like that on these streams. So it's content they don't control with their superstars will be the way they see it.
One thing as well, in theory, everything that you've said is correct there, John. However, the one thing that I'll say is, contracts can essentially get around anything. For me, the way that I would adapt it is, you know, I write for SportsGeeda, I can write anywhere I want, I don't need to clear it with them. I work on a contract with them, but the contract is very open in terms of terms. However, I've applied to other places before and they've said to me, if you were to write for us, you are not allowed to write for here or here or here, but you wouldn't be counted as an employee. You wouldn't get the benefits that an employee would get. So sadly, no, something that's exclusive to wrestling. And yeah, it's just the moral of the story is just read a contract before you sign it. Make sure you negotiate whatever terms you want, because employment law is employment law, but a lot of contracts can get around it using wee loopholes here and there. So it'd be interesting to see who gets what terms going forward.
Speaking of employment law, it'd be interesting to see how much employment law has caught up to even realise things like streaming and that kind of jazz. I'd imagine it'll be a very grey area currently. Sorry, John, I think you sounded like you...
We could go into this. I've got a very detailed... Coming from the radio background, there was actually a case like quite... But it's boring. We'll just skip on to
more. Next week's promo.
Employment law. Let's not talk about employment law anymore. Anyway, so they're getting to still do Cameo and Twitch. So that's all cool. Big surprise for me, the Authors of Pain have been released this week.
Oh, John, you missed a flawless segue. Speaking of contracts, to people who no longer have one.
Boo, John. Boo, boo, boo.
You're coming from a radio background. I should have gone for it, Gary.
This one came completely out of the blue. I don't think, you know, if you look at it over the grand scheme of their run, I don't think it's a huge surprise, but it came out of the blue anyway. Authors of Pain just released out of nowhere. Akim and Rezar, both no longer under contract. One of them, I can't remember what one, was, I don't want to say severely injured, but was injured and on the shelf and projected to be on the shelf for a long time. The interesting thing here, a lot of people have suspected that Lars Sullivan is still under contract because he's injured. I think one of Authors of Pain was actually still injured. I don't think they'd fully recovered. No clarity on that, so I can't tell you, but interesting to note.
Why does Lars Sullivan still have a job? Homophobic.
So the interesting thing about this, Authors of Pain, you know, we know one of them was injured, they had a pretty snake-bitten run on the main roster, you know, after Paul Ellering disappeared, they were paired with Drake Maverick, they were kind of in and out of different storylines, chucked with Seth Rollins, and one gets injured straight away. So yeah, they're gone. Dave Meltzer, I've not said it for a while, my favourite journalist, Dave Meltzer.
You've had Alex McCarthy on. You can't call them both your favourite journalists on the same show.
That is true. My second favourite journalist, Dave Meltzer. So he actually, and I can do another wee plug here, which is good. He referred to them as being the modern day Road Warriors. You know, Animal and Hawk, who are a dominant force, and then things didn't quite go as planned later on in their career. The Road Warriors, one of whom is on Sportskeeda Wrestling every Monday after Raw, talking about Raw.
I think there's only one left, Gary. So
yeah, exactly.
I wonder what planet it is.
I should have maybe specified that, but yeah, trying to flawlessly segue in there again, that didn't work. So apparently they weren't going to be paired back up with Seth Rollins after coming back, which obviously didn't happen. And yeah, it was Razor that injured his bicep, but they were apparently going to be teamed back up with Paul Ellering. Interesting, because, you know, the full, I don't think it was ever clarified, but the full speculation as to why Paul Ellering left, I was going to say the Road Warriors, left Authors of Pain was because the rumour was that he didn't want to travel. Right now, WWE only travelling, so they could have easily brought him back if he's based in Florida. Might have been worthwhile, but we'll wait and see. Again, don't know if they're injured.
Is his daughter not also recently signed with WWE, and as such, he might?
No, she's more of a. She got released from WWE many months ago, and she recently was on AEW Dark. So that's
where it was.
Yeah. So that's where the interesting thing is, where I'm going, would they go back? Would they maybe go to AEW? Or if AOP go to AEW, might we see a reunion there? So that could be really interesting. A lot of nice comments going on with this, where like, will we see the ports of discomfort in the Impact Zone and stuff like that?
I could see Impact being a better fit for them, to be honest. Like, you put them in there with like Gallows and Anderson, they could become a Gallows Anderson, the Motor City Machine Guns, the Authors of Pain, and the North. That's a cracking base of a tag team.
I think AEW could do a tag. There's no team like that.
There's not a big destructive force.
Not a big team. So I think, if I was Tony Khan sitting there going, they look the part. I mean, they look brutal, and they're massive. If you had Paul Ellering back with them in AEW, you know, because they've obviously got Jake the Snake there, they've got Tully,
I was going to say, against Tully and FTR, that's something I would like to see Paul Ellering with AOP. The interesting thing, though, one of them is a very, very experienced MMA fighter, so who knows, they'll even stay in wrestling. I might venture back in it, or might do both, you never know. But
is this the one that's injured, the MMA fighter, or is it the other one?
Good question. No idea.
Because that would maybe change how that goes.
Aye.
You know, it must be Razor, because you would have seen Akeem in Raw Underground if it had been him.
That's true. Aye.
Moving on to the next story. Talking about tag teams and injuries and all that sort of stuff. There we go. There's a little link for you. Ivar in Raw last night.
Aye, this was one that was immediately obvious. And again, it's never good when this happens. We've been speaking about the Matt Hardy situation. While it wasn't the same, and I don't want to compare the two, the X being thrown up as the link here. Ivar ran, bounced off the ropes, done the suicide dive to the outside. The landing didn't look too bad at first, but the second he lands, it doesn't just throw up the X, he's like properly hammering his fists together to throw up the X. And at the end of the match, you know, they cut away, they show everything that happened in ring. The end of the match was botched a wee bit. They had Ricochet, you know, I think he kicked out before the three count personally, but I think they just wanted to get the match over and done with, you know, get everything done and let Ivar get whatever attention he needed. It doesn't seem to be as bad as previously thought, I don't think, because all WWE have said on it is a cervical injury. So obviously that can range for anything, because I believe that's more likely to affect lower back, getting into leg, one of the legs. I'm not certain on that. But when I watched back the landing, I went back to see it because they didn't show it again, obviously. And essentially, Ivar jumps out onto, like, I think four people. I think everybody's on the outside. And it hits like Lashley with like a kind of axe handle, but it looks like it only lands on one leg and you don't see anything after that. So I was like, oh, it must be ankle or knee. It seems like he's folded on the leg, but cervical injury. WWE has said that he was rushed to hospital, a term they've now used twice in the past weekend. They've not used local medical facility. So rushed to hospital and has suffered a cervical injury, but is expected to make a full recovery. I think that's an interesting term in itself, because it doesn't put a timeline on it at all, and expected to make a full recovery, I think, almost hints that it's serious, but again, you don't really want to look into the wording too much.
Yeah.
you know, you'd always expect that any wrestler getting injured would make a full recovery. I know that we shouldn't look at it like that, because any injury can be a career ender, but it seems like a cervical injury of some sort, and will hopefully be back soon. But I guess you just mentioned earlier where authors are pain.
Yeah.
It looks like Eric's going to be on Raw Underground for the next few weeks, because he's been making quite a good show.
He's good on Raw Underground. At least he's got that MMA background to save his career just now.
And there you go. That's another tag team gone for that floundering tag team division that WWE have right now. So
yeah,
hopefully I
think you, what you said earlier on, reuniting unifying the tag team titles is the only way to go at the moment. Unless they bring up a few teams, put Breezango back in.
The interesting point is, would they just unify the Raw and SmackDown ones and get rid of the penny belts, or would they actually, you know, have NXT as part of it? Because NXT's got a decent roster tag team wise, and they've still got grizzled young veterans to return to the actual NXT roster as well. So, honestly, I know Forgotten Sons was meant to be moved up to be part of that, and we all know what happened there. But any of the tag teams that are on NXT could be a good addition to Raw SmackDown. Even like Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch would be brilliant on Raw SmackDown. So
yeah, no, absolutely. So no, I'll be interested to see, and like fingers crossed that, you know, it doesn't, because you know, apart that's been pushed, it's been two steps forward, one step back kind of thing for the Viking Raiders. So hopefully they can get back off his injury and they can get a push. Gary, as ever, thank you very much for the news.
Thank you.
Ah, feel the sun in your face as we once again walk along the sandy beaches of Fantasy Booking Island. This week or last week, there was a slight change in the rules after it ended in a draw, so we went for a triple threat match between myself, Alex and Gary, and we were asked to book an actor in wrestling. So we put this to the vote. We all did our pitch last week. We put it to the vote. And in order, let's go through the results. In joint second, it's Gary and Alex, who took a 23.5% share of the vote, which means after my pitch for Arnie and Planet Hollywood, which I had to actually educate Alex this week, was actually an actual thing, a restaurant, which Willis,
I know what it is, and
Arnie put together.
Justice for Demi Moore, who you left out of the booking.
I did leave out the booking, but anyway, I won, booking Arnie and Stallone and Willis as a faction in WWE, 53% in the vote.
Woo-hoo! So if we count John's disqualification, me and Alex finished joint first. Is that the
sweet, excellent? Yeah, right, fair play, well done. We drew one. It was great booking from both of us.
I think the best way we can settle this is to have next week's Fantasy Booking Island written off, and we play John at poker, because he's clearly not got the poker face to get through that.
Well, I think going forward, that's how we're going to do it. The listeners will suggest the booking, and we'll get them to vote who they think is the best. Because I seem to have a bit more luck doing it that way.
I wonder where that decision came from.
Do we have an independent adjudicator here, or would you like to educate the listeners who's counting the votes?
Listen, it's not, if you get onto the Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingdaft, that's where you'll get to see the vote, and it was all legit. I'll take a screenshot for you, completely legit. So, as one of our fans of the show, Ron Chell, says, this is my island now. Let's go to this week's booking, which was suggested by Willie on Twitter. He says, since Brock is now a free agent, fantasy book him either at AEW, New Japan, or just any wrestling company.
I guess that means that if you won, you should be the person that gets to pick the order this week, because otherwise you don't really get it out of it.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's a good suggestion, Gary. I like that. So, I am going to go last. And I think because he's so full of himself and he wins all the time, we'll put Alex first. So, 3 minutes.
I'm scared that me and Alex have got the same one, in all honesty.
Right. 3 minutes to book Brock Lesnar in any promotion, Alex. Your time starts now.
Okay, so after his loss to Orange Cassidy, Jericho comes out and he starts ranting about, even though he lost, the fact that he makes more money than Orange Cassidy, and it doesn't matter. But he's cut off. He's cut off by Eric Bischoff, who walks out, and he says that Mr. Cassidy has hired him to be his legal representation. Here's a cease and desist order, Mr. Jericho. You must now leave Orange Cassidy alone. Jericho kicks off, he goes mad, starts beating on Bischoff, smashes Bubbly over his head, fucking throws him off the top of the stage. So the next week, Jericho comes back out. He's just bought a boat because he's got so much money. He got a great deal because of COVID. It was 10%, so $26 million. He's bought a boat for his cruise. But again, he's interrupted by Eric Bischoff. But Eric Bischoff is in a wheelchair and he's got the full shebang on. He's in casts, he's in neck braces. And he says, Mr. Jericho, I am suing you for assault and battery for the grand total of $25 million. And as such, we've got like a couple of weeks worth of silly legal disputes between the two of them. We can get what's-his-face MJF lawyer involved because he was great. I loved him. But the result is, at Full Gear, we have Jericho versus Bischoff's choice. And if Jericho loses, he loses his boat. But if he wins, he gets off from the charge. So we get to the main event. Here it is. Jericho comes out. He's looking smug as hell because he thinks he's got this. But out comes Bischoff in his wheelchair. And he's an outcome, and then Brock Lesnar's UFC music hits, and out he walks. Jericho looks horrified. Bischoff, big smile on his face, stands up, takes all the stuff off. It's obviously been a ruse, and he turns around and he takes up a briefcase and opens it up, and it's $1 million, which he presents to Brock Lesnar to pay him for the match to go and beat up Chris Jericho. So essentially, Jericho gets the hell beaten out of him and gets so badly beaten up, he gets reduced to commentary for the next 6 months. And is just turned face on the back of it. So we come back to more legal debacles between Jericho and Bischoff. And basically, because Jericho now has grounds for being cheated since Bischoff was actually lying about his injury. And so basically, we come back to the booking at Bash at the Beach. No, actually, on Jericho's cruise, the main event is Brock Lesnar versus Jake Hager on a boat for the boat, with the winner getting the boat. And basically, Jake Hager can come out of this and look like the MMA badass he was always supposed to be, go clean over Brock Lesnar, and then the final scene is the face inner circle all celebrating, and there's a really emotional moment when Jake Hager hangs the anchor of the ship to Chris Jericho.
I thought you were going to have Jake Hager driving the boat at the end. That would have been a good partnering shot.
I thought we were going to have Brock Lesnar wrestling a shark.
Well, that was, the idea actually came from, was it they were talking about doing UFC at sea?
Yep.
So I wanted to do something like that, but then I thought I'd break the rules because that's not a wrestling promotion. So I was like, right, we'll just have a match at sea.
I like the boat angle. I've never seen that in wrestling. When the winner gets the boat, I like that angle.
Yeah, yeah, the cruise ship, because that's where, because it would make sense for Jericho to buy a boat because he does a cruise, and cruisers aren't operating, so it's kind of...
I don't think many people will be going on a cruise in the next wee while. Not bad. I like that one. I like that one. Gary, you were screwing your face up there, so I'm thinking you've got something quite similar.
No, I think I've got away with it a wee bit. I think I'm okay.
Okay then, mate. Your time starts now.
So, the FTW team that we've got in, I think everybody can see where I'm going with this anyway, in AEW. Taz and Brian Cage, there's been a wee bit of, you know, discomfort going back and forward there. We already had Taz thrown in the towel, but everything seems rosy now. It seems like he's leading this good faction going forward. Brian Cage is the FTW champion. Probably has a claim to say, you know, maybe I should be the AEW champion if Taz hadn't thrown in that towel. So he argues his case, gets a rematch. What happens? Bloodbath. And the same thing happens again. Taz throws in that towel. The next week on, I was going to say the next night, but it's three nights later, on Dynamite, Brian Cage says, I would have won that match. I should be AEW champion. Here is your stupid belt. I'm no longer FTW champion. It's a joke of a championship, and you're no longer my manager. Body slams Taz, writes him off TV for a few weeks. Goes on a massive dominant streak, runs through absolutely everyone, ends up beating John Moxley, ends up the AEW champion. We've got Brian Cage, top of the division, and then a few weeks later, cuts a promo saying, I've beat everybody there is to beat. Taz comes out, holding the FTW championship, neck brace on, and says, you think you put me through agony? Here comes the pain. Brock Lesnar walks out. He hands Brock Lesnar the FTW Championship, says, this is the new FTW Champion. He is here to run AEW. He is the man to take the AEW championship off of you. And we've got it at the full feud, Brock Lesnar versus Brian Cage. And they go forward, have the full, you know, back and forward, have that full pay-per-view match. Brock Lesnar wins the championship. We end up with Brock Lesnar holding both titles, unifies both titles, legitimizes the FTW championship. And then where I thought Alex was going is where I can go. Brock Lesnar comes out and issues an open challenge the next week on Dynamite. And who comes out to challenge him? Orange Cassidy. And that's the end. That's as far as I got.
Yeah. I'm in for Orange Cassidy. Brock Lesnar. I'm so into that. Good. I like that as well. Right. I'll just proceed mine by saying this is completely and utterly fantasy, right? Because this had never happened. But here's what I'm going to go for it anyway. So I'll start the time. Here we go. In 2020, a wrestling company let one of the biggest stars' contracts run out. This man promptly escaped from picking up a massive wage to his ranch in Canada. Today, still wanted by every wrestling company, he survives as a wrestler of fortune. If you have a problem and no one else can help, and if you can afford him, maybe you can hire Brock Lesnar. Anyway, so Brock Lesnar is effectively the A-team of wrestling, okay? So every promotion across the world, whether it be ICW, whether it be Red Pro, whether it be Evolve, Evolve's not there anymore, but all the promotions, if they're having issues, the promoter's having issues with, say, a faction or a wrestler running roughshod over the promoter, Brock Lesnar there is a gun for hire. So basically, all these promotions across the world would book an angle effective to that for the money man Lesnar to come in and absolutely destroy whatever bad faction, whatever type champion's been an arsehole. The promoter basically brings him in. So Dallas would bring in Lesnar for a Hydro show. You know, and he pops up in New Japan, battering Evil for being a dick, or battering all the Bullet Club for being fannies. And Brock Lesnar is basically just the effective A-team of wrestling. So this all accumulates to AEW. We have, you know, Brody Lee and the Dark Order, a simulated AEW, a very kind of NWO-style assimilation, where they've basically just taken over and they are running. The Dark Order is running AEW. And there's Tony Khan on the phone. He has a problem. He doesn't have anyone else to help him, and he can find him because he's got his mobile number. So he hires Brock Lesnar. Brock comes to the ring and he destroys the Dark Order, destroys Brody Lee, takes the title off him. And you know what? Brock doesn't, he doesn't play for titles. He just cares about the money. He just drops the title and goes into the sunset. And AEW is freed from the grasp of the Dark Order thanks to Brock Lesnar / A-Team Wrestling.
The only thing that could have made that better is if you'd had the Ghostbusters theme tune, but with who you gotta call Brock Lesnar. And
or maybe at the end of it, he actually just drops the belt and says, "I love it when a plan comes together while smoking a cigar." That is how. There we go.
That was genius. That was truly genius. I mean, the only thing I would say is, do you think Lesnar would work as a face?
Oh, yeah.
People kind of like him anyway. I think it doesn't need to be a face. People just like him.
But he's just a tweener. He just comes in and kicks ass and leaves. He doesn't take sides. Brock Lesnar doesn't take sides.
He doesn't need titles either. You know, remember that time he battered Cena at SummerSlam? It was a beautiful thing. Right. So, yeah, there we go. So, we've got the three picks. We've got Alex boat match, Brock Lesnar versus Chris Jericho.
It's the match for the boat on a boat. That's the billing.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Gary assimilating the FTW and AEW titles, and basically Taz with Lesnar defeating Cage, and then you've got Brock Lesnar as the A-team. So that's the three choices you've got for next week. Please get on our Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingdaft. You can vote on who you think are the favourite, and next week we'll be looking for another booking that we can take on. So look out for that on our Twitter, all the usual places. Until next time, we're stuck here in Fantasy Island, boys. Au revoir. So, more big guests on Wrestling Daft, and it's a returning guest to Wrestling Daft. We had him on episode number one, Le Champion, with Rab and Grado, and now we have got a hold of him on the marks, thanks to our good friend Gary Cassidy. Gary, you caught off with the demo god himself, Chris Jericho. What did the big man have to say? Does he remember us fondly?
I didn't ask. I thought, you know, I don't want to embarrass the guy too much by making him mark out for Wrestling Daft. So I was like, I'll just leave that bit to the side and instead just make an arse of myself by forgetting he was a journalist. Chris Jericho, always money. I think I could have asked him to read the dictionary and people would have cared anyway. But I caught up with him just before All Out. We chatted about the big news that was going on. The guy that we were booking on Fantasy Booking Island, Brock Lesnar. Free agent Brock Lesnar. Is he actually a free agent? Chris Jericho doesn't quite agree with that, but he had a lot to say on that. He had a lot to say on the Thunderdome and how the Thunderdome compares to AEW's Daily's Place, which hosts real fans sitting in seats, actually being there in person. Spoke a lot about that, a lot of controversial opinions. And then, of course, I put my foot in my mouth by saying that I think, you know, Chris Jericho, you've been everything, you know, wrestler, actor, podcaster, entrepreneur, has his own crews, done absolutely everything, but he's not been a journalist. And asked him for some advice on what I should ask Tony Khan. Ended up not asking Tony Khan it anyway, so I could have just not put my foot in my mouth. But yeah, Jericho then tells me that he is indeed a journalist and explains that he has a journalism degree and wrote for two newspapers in Winnipeg. So yeah, great fun. If nothing else, even if you're not a Jericho fan, which I think more people are a Jericho fan than would want to hear me make a fool of myself, there's something in it for everyone because I'm sure everybody will want to hear one or two of those things happen.
It's a beautiful thing when it happens. I listen to it and I actually piss myself when I was editing because Gary tries to wriggle out of it. Oh yeah, of course you were. Did what you wrote?
Oh, the Winnipeg, whatever it was.
Please listen to Gary squirm as the interview goes on. But anyway, here he is.
Champ- this is Jericho saying in my book.
Here's Le Champion on Wrestling Daft.
Hey everyone, welcome to the most awkward part of any video interview where I need to give an introduction because it would be rude not to, but you can see exactly who I'm going to introduce and they need no introduction. So let's just get it out of the way really quickly. First ever AEW World Champion, frontman of Fozzy. You can't see him anymore because he's in disguise, which is great. Host of Talk is Jericho, the man who created his own champagne and maybe the greatest ever wrestler, definitely one of the greatest ever performers of all time. It is Chris Jericho. How's it going, Chris?
Ah, it's me. Surprise. Did I fool you? Oh, yeah, it's good, man. Just enjoying these new school interviews where everybody wants to Zoom now. So you can't just do them on your phone from wherever you are, which is the way I used to do it. So now I actually have to be responsible and find Wi-Fi in a nice area to do it in. So here we go.
It means you can't just do interviews while on the toilet or doing whatever you like.
Yeah, in bed. exactly.
Yeah, but that's the world we live in right now. So Demo God, where did that come from? Did that just come straight out of the mind of Chris Jericho?
It's funny because we're not in competition, but of course you're in competition. And there was a few weeks that went by where our competitor was beating us in actual viewers.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course you don't want that, but they never beat us in the demo. And to me, I wanted to show that to kind of the naysayers that are like, see, the AEW experiment is over. It's like, it's not over because if one company draws 1 million viewers and they only do 200,000 in this money-making demo, and another company draws 500,000 viewers but draws 400,000 of those in that demo, we win. But so it almost was like I wanted to, as a heel, I'm the one that can point that out. And so I just thought, okay, well, I'm going to start arguing about the demos. I think it was the week that Sasha Banks's match beat mine. She didn't beat mine because my demo crushed them. My demo still crushed Keith Lee's match with Adam Cole. So I take great pride in that. And so I started just saying, you know, demo this, demo that. And of course, being an old, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and heavy metal fan, we all know what demigods are. Yeah. And this was the demo god. So it just kind of rolls off the tongue. And like any other catchphrase, you say it once, you see how it goes over, people respond, people write about it, and then you're off and running. Let's make a t-shirt and cement it.
And sell millions of those t-shirts. Definitely.
Exactly.
So that's, we mentioned the AEW's, you know, maybe a year and a bit into live TV. I believe it was, and correct me if I'm wrong at any point here, but I believe it was January last year that you signed a contract for 3 years. We're now maybe a year and a half into that, I think, if that's correct.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, you're probably better with dates than I am, but I remember it was in January. So yeah, a year and a half in, absolutely. Yep.
Do you see yourself staying in AEW beyond that, or wrestling beyond that, or is it something you've not really thought of yet?
I never put a time limit on anything that I do wrestling wise. I mean, I thought back in 2015 it was time to wrap it up, and then I got into the angle with Kevin Owens and things became fun again, which led to me going to Japan, and which made it even more fun, which led me to come to AEW, which is the best time I've had in the business in, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years maybe. So I will not go anywhere. I have no intention of leaving AEW, and I have no intention of not wrestling. But even if I don't wrestle ever again, I'll just commentate after that, which is something that I never really, really thought about until I had to do it when we had to film four weeks of TV in one day. And I just said, well, just put me on commentary. That way we don't have to worry about angles, or because I hadn't really no storyline to talk about at the time. So let me just do commentary. And suddenly that became a thing. So yeah, there's no reason for me to go anywhere. I'm very happy in AEW. I'm very creatively stimulated here. And I enjoy coming to work every time, every week, every month, whenever it may be. And to me, that the fact I'm having as much fun as I'm having and doing the work that I'm doing now after almost 30 years in the business is a testament to the longevity that I have, and also to the great environment that AEW is providing for me.
Definitely. And you know, we mentioned there that the word free agent might have came up there at some point, as in you're not going anywhere. So I need to ask you about someone that this week has apparently become a free agent. Brock Lesnar. A lot of rumors that Brock Lesnar might go to AEW. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Well, the only reason why the rumors are there is because somebody said free agent. I don't think he's really a free agent at all. I think it would take so much money to pry him away from Vince McMahon on Brock's end, and then for Vince to approve that. I mean, Vince has $2 billion in the bank. What are you going to spend on Brock Lesnar that Vince isn't going to match? And Vince and Brock have a strange love affair to begin with. So would Brock fit in at AEW? Would he pay back his salary that you would pay him to be in AEW? Who's to say? But I think UFC, AEW, I think this is just another one of the dances that Vince and Brock like to have, where Brock's contract expires, Vince lets it expire, and then they kind of stay away from each other for a few months until the next Saudi Arabia show, or, you know, the next show that has people in the crowd, or WrestleMania, whatever it may be. So I don't think Brock is really a free agent in that sense of the word. I just think he's not currently under contract right now. But the amount of money it would take to tear him away from the world of WWE, A, would be astronomical. B, Vince would never allow it to happen. And C, I don't know if you could make that investment back, or if it would even be worth it for AEW at this point in time, or UFC, or any other company other than WWE.
Yeah, definitely. That's, but you've got to admire the negotiating tactics, I guess, in some way.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's a very, very smart guy. And Vince is a very smart guy as well. So I think they appreciate the duel that they have with each other.
Yeah, definitely. And we mentioned it a few times, fans. AEW had fans back in last week, you know, real fans, people actually sitting in seats. 500 sounded like, you know, 50,000 because of how loud they were. Obviously, WWE has brought in the Thunderdome. Have you got any thoughts on the Thunderdome and maybe Kenny Omega's appearance in the Thunderdome last week, as we've seen someone holding up a photo of him?
I think it looks great. I think it's a great idea. They desperately needed it. And, you know, whenever you give wrestling fans a rope, they're going to, you know, hang themselves. So, you know, I don't think Kenny was really there or, you know, all these other people that they have. I mean, just go and have fun and enjoy the show. It's something out of, you know, Black Mirror or you know, The Running Man. It's very strange. It does look great. But once again, you cannot replace a live crowd. I would much rather have 500 real fans than 1,000 TV screen fans. And I bet you the WWE would agree with that. But having said that, I think it looks great and good for them.
Yeah, and on that note, John Moxley recently named at the very top of the PWI 500. You were up there as well. You were pretty close to the top. Do you agree with John Moxley being number one?
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with it. I mean, of course, I should be number one on every list ever published from now until the end of time. But if it's not going to be me, I think the guy who's made the biggest transition from WWE to AEW, and also taking AEW directly on his back. And once again, he won the title about 2 weeks before a freaking pandemic shut everything down. So he's done a great job with that situation that he was put in. And I think, I would put him at number one. Like I said, I mean, there's a couple of the guys you could put in there, but I think Mox has given his heart and soul to AEW, and he's a completely different performer than he ever was under any other name in any other company. And this is the guy that I think he always envisioned he could be, and that I envisioned he can be when I started, you know, recruiting him to come to AEW a year and a half ago.
And I've got one final question. Chris Jericho, you've done absolutely everything, you know, musician, wrestler, entrepreneur, podcast host, absolutely everything, actor, throw in as many of those as you want. I don't think you've ever been a journalist, though, so I want to turn the tables on you for something. This week, I'm going to be on a conference call with Tony Khan. If you were to let me in and tell me what I should ask Tony Khan, what would you want someone to ask him?
Well, first of all, I am a journalist. I have a degree. I have a degree in journalism, and I wrote for the Winnipeg Free Press and the Winnipeg Sun.
I completely
Sun
forgot
for years,
about the Winnipeg
so.
Free Press.
Listen, man, you're an interviewer, right? What's the name of your show? What is this show?
Well, that's a Sports Gita. This is for Sports Gita Wrestling.
Okay, so you have to think of that. I can't do your job for you. What I would ask Tony Khan is different from what you might want to ask him. So, and I interviewed Tony Khan and Talk as Jericho as well. So you have to figure out what interests you the most about him and listen to the conversation. Sometimes the questions that you might have get thrown away because what you're talking about is far more interesting, but you have to be good enough of a journalist to understand that. So don't be the guy that just has a list of questions and doesn't listen to the answer because you're too busy looking at question three. What did you have for breakfast today? And he's giving you the cure for cancer, but you're not paying attention and cut him off and go to your next question. That's bad journalism.
I was really, really hoping you were going to just tell me to ask him, can you give Chris Jericho a pay rise? But that might be my question anyway. We'll wait and see how
what?
It plays out.
Give Chris Jericho what?
A pay rise. Give him more money.
Oh, a pay raise.
Yeah, a pay
somebody
raise.
Somebody said a pie rise. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
That as well. That could be a good match stipulation. We'll wait and see after the Mimosa Mayhem match anyway.
There you go, man.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, brother. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
So that's it for this week's show. Please rate, review, subscribe on Apple or get us where you get your podcast. Thank you very much to Alex McCarthy, who was on later on. We've heard from John Moxley, we've had Chris Jericho. Where can we get your cheating podcast? Where can we find you, Gary?
Oh, that's it's on Alex McCarthy's YouTube channel, but it's also on Wrestling First and the I and First is a one on Twitter.
Oh, so you've done with putting the one as an I. How cool are you?
I think it's back to an at Gary Cassidy situation where somebody had already took Wrestling First and hadn't used it for I. So I mean, next best thing.
It's I'm not surprised. That's quite like there'll be someone out there who'll just get all the wrestling something handles.
Aye, in the space of the last however long Twitter's existed, I'm pretty sure someone has had a similar idea to have that. But aye, it's on there. But again, same as everything. If you follow me on Twitter at Wrestling Gary, I retweet everything I do because, like DDP, I am a shameless self-promoter. So I will literally retweet everything I do. So you'll just find it on there.
There you go. Alex, where can we get you on Twitter?
A thirsty baboon. I occasionally comment on John's posts on the main Twitter page, only to shame John for his previous post.
Absolutely. Why not? Remember, we go twice a week. Rab and Grado will be back on Friday. Though Grado has just sent me a message. Let's see what he says. He's filming Scott Squad. So here is Grado's message about...
I'll be there. I'll be back. We've got now your wee nephew at Denver. Aye, get me out with busting. Aye, we've been acting away. Since I do a podcast with your Uncle Rob.
So there we go. I didn't know what that message would be. So you'll find out that on Friday that Rab Dero has been acting with Rab's nephew on Scott Squad. So we'll get that story on Friday on the show. The list of wrestling daft, we're doing Icon versus Icon off the back of the fact that there's been a few like fan posters for Reigns versus Rock at WrestleMania next year. So we thought we'd do Icon versus Icon and go back to, would you like us to talk about the greatest moments of Ric Flair or would you like to talk about the greatest moments of Hulk Hogan? Who do you think won that?
I'm not sure it could go either way.
Please listeners, before you announce it, please tell me they picked Ric Flair because if they went for Terry, I'm just going to give up on life.
You know our listeners well. Ric Flair won with an
absolute... Oh, thank God. Well done, guys. Well done. Well done. You get my full applause for that decision.
Yeah. Any favourite Ric Flair moments, gents, off the top of your head?
Oh, it's obvious. It's got to be obvious. No, not even that. The retirement. The perfect retirement. For me, that, and I love the recent one with the Randy Orton segment. I think that definitely is up there for me. I know that recent stuff always, you know, but that one for me. But I think the Shawn Michaels kick and the retirement match was absolutely insane. That for me is the best Ric Flair moment of all time. Actually, no, a lie. Let me put myself over. The best Ric Flair moment of all time was me being photobombed by Ric Flair when I took a photo with Paige at the BT Sports Studios and getting to see him and Stephanie McMahon have a wee cuddle and chat away while I was just stood marking it about everything. So I let me be selfish on that one.
Alex, you got one?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because we've almost got through this entire podcast without using the three letters that are TNA. So the Jay Lethal, the Ric Flair podcast? The promo off when Ric Flair ends up like elbow dropping his jacket and like getting all red and sweaty. It's truly terrific.
The woo off.
The woo off. And the fact that Jay Lethal does a better Ric Flair than Ric Flair is just fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, listen, you can talk. We'll be talking about that on Friday. Retro review is WrestleMania 20. So get on to that and watch that before the show this week, so you can give us your review of that. Remember, head to our Patreon. Loads of stuff up there. Patreon.com/wrestlingbath. Check out the video version of this show. Get yourself a t-shirt as well. shop.spreadshirt.co.uk/wrestlingbath. Boys, thank you very much as ever. And until next time, keep marking out. Audio Frontier.